Welcome to the Mom's Day Bunker with Carrie Henson. In the bunker, you will find joy, grief, laughter, and remembrance. It is a safe place for moms to gather during the storms of motherhood, to share stories and to encourage each other as we navigate doomsday moments that change the trajectory of our path as women. Our stories contain difficult subjects that may be triggering for some listeners. These are real stories from real moms that are surviving, have survived, and are thriving after the unthinkable happened. Please take care of your mama heart as we cozy up together, take shelter from the world, and begin. Okay, y'all, if this was a real SHTF situation, and we were like really in a bunker, and if you don't know what SHTF stands for, it stands for shit hits the fan. Okay, so if shit hits the fan and we're in a real bunker here, right? Let's imagine that for a second. And it's not hard for you to imagine because you've actually lived through an SHTF. You may not have responded to it the same way your neighbor responded to it, but the minute spring break of March 2020 hit, everyone was in an SHTF situation because we didn't know what was going on with this COVID virus. We didn't know what was going on with these, you know, we have to wear masks and don't go outside and we're going to close the schools. And I mean, it was insane. Like the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo shut down mid rodeo. And that is a huge deal in Houston. It's a big deal in Texas. Like you don't just shut it down, you know, in public schools, you don't just shut them down, but it did. And so that was, it really like freaked a lot of people out. A lot of people didn't know what to do. And then they were stuck at home. And, you know, I mean, you know, because you lived through it, right? I don't have to explain it. You lived through an SHTF situation. Now, they weren't zombies. There wasn't an asteroid coming to the world to destroy it. It wasn't economic collapse or nuclear war or EMP. I mean, there's a lot of theories out there in the prepper community of like what could happen, right? And we have to prepare for what might happen. But let's just pretend that this is an SHTF situation. We are in the bunker. You are in the Mom's Day bunker with me, and we have to survive. What's the one thing you bring into the bunker with you? And someone asked me this question, and I went, my dog. I didn't say my kids. I said, my dog. I got to have my dog, you know? And I imagine you would grab your furry animals too, you know, because they're part of your family. And I had this dog, like really, well, I had my first dog when I was 15. I had a boyfriend buy this gorgeous border collie chow mix. So she looked like a border collie. She was black and white, but she was all furry like a chow. And she was just gorgeous. But I was 15. So, you know, that wasn't really my dog. That was my parents' dog because, you know, I was 15. And when I was maybe 21, 22, 23, somewhere around there, I got my dog, like my first dog. And his name was Hoover. And he was just the best dog, y'all. Like he was smart. He was a shepherd and he had one blue eye and one brown eye. And he was protective and he was very intuitive. He was an intuitive dog. He wasn't aggressive. He was very gentle and sweet with the babies. I got him before I had babies. So he had to like grow up with all six of these children. And he was just the best. You know, he was a ranch dog. He was running around on this ranch. And then we moved to Houston and he had to learn what a fence was. And he didn't like the fence. In fact, he learned how to climb over the fence of the backyard so he can go roam the neighborhood, do his business, and come back. And at one point, everyone in like maybe a 3 or 4 block radius knew who Hoover was, greeted him, and let him go. Because well-intended neighbors would see this gorgeous blue merle shepherd dog with a blue eye and a brown eye who was very sweet. And they would go, oh, someone lost you. And they would put him in their backyard and he couldn't get out. And so, you know, it was a matter of telling the neighbors, hey, he climbs our fence and he's very friendly and he's very sweet. And that dog was with me through so much, man. He was with me through so much. He was a great dog. He would know when I was sad and he would lay in the bed with me. He would know when I was anxious and he would put his paw on me. And he was just the best dog. And I would bring him into the bunker. I would not leave him. He has passed. He passed what I call the worst week of my life. And it's a chapter in my book. It's titled Hemorrhoids, aka the worst week of my life. And yes, you can laugh at that because hemorrhoids are funny. They're not funny if you have them, but they are kind of funny. I miss him. I miss that dog. I have a lot of moms ask me how I'm so strong. Like, how are you so strong? Or they'll tell me I'm strong. They'll say, you are so strong. Like, you're such a strong-willed mom. Like, how did you get through all of these SHTF moments in your life? These atomic bombs that attacked your motherhood, these Mom's Day moments. Like, how did you do that? How did you get through that? And that's a good question. I think that's a very good question. Or maybe the question should be, am I strong? Am I that strong? I keep going. I keep moving forward. God willing, I keep going, right? It's like when the pandemic hit and it was an SHTF situation for a lot of people, it's because the majority of those people had never been through a trauma before. And our family already had. We had done it over and over and over again. So by the time 2020 hit, man, we were golden. It was a vacation for us. We were like going back and forth to the ranch and we were homeschooling the kids and our older kids who were in public school, they were rocking virtual school because we had already been there. We had already gone through so many SHTF moments that our nervous system recognized it and was like, we got this, man. We got this. And I don't think that's strength. I think that's familiarity. It's familiarity. Like, our bodies were familiar with the unknown, the stress. We weren't quite familiar with the storm that was playing out on the media or on social media. Like, we weren't familiar with that, but we were familiar with the chaos. And so we just sailed through it. It really did not affect our family the way it affected millions and millions and millions of other people. But where does our strength come from? Well, furthermore, where does our motherhood come from? When I had my first child, I was 24 years old, and I was scared to death. I was so afraid to have this baby, mainly because I didn't know what the heck was going to happen to my body, right? I'd never experienced it before, and that was scary. Is it going to be painful? Like, the medical community, scare the heck out of you with all the things that can go wrong, right? They do it. They have to cover themselves, and childbirth is scary and it is dangerous, can be, but it can also be beautiful and it can be totally natural and you can have it at home. Like, there's so many different ways to look at it. But I was scared to death. It was my first one. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't have social media then, and I didn't really have moms my age. I was the first one to have kids in my friend group, so I couldn't like ask them what was going on. And man, it was the worst experience. It was the absolute worst experience. I have no idea why or how I did it 5 more times. I am a glutton for punishment, I guess, because it was the absolute worst. I labored for 17 hours. The epidural didn't work. They were pushing these other pain meds in that didn't work. They just made me feel drunk. Then I pushed for 2 hours. 2 hours. It was horrible. It was painful. When he came out, my right hip subluxated. That sucked. I don't know what they did to my back with the epidural. That sucked. I had postpartum depression like immediately. I wouldn't even hold him for 2 hours. Like, the poor child was born and they kept trying to put him in my arms and I kept going, get that thing away from me. It was the worst experience. It was nothing that I had dreamed of. I had dreamed of, oh, I'm going to have the baby and my husband's going to be by my side and it's going to be this beautiful experience. I'm going to cry. I'm going to put him on my chest and he's going to nurse and it's going to be great. Well, he wasn't on my chest. He didn't nurse. It was such a struggle that I gave up after like 3 weeks. I was like, screw it. This is not worth it. I pretty much hated him. I hated my baby. And it didn't help that I was in the marriage that I was in. It didn't help that I didn't have a community. I didn't understand the value of community. I had community. I had friends. None of them were moms. And then I got pregnant again under pretty stressful circumstances. And it didn't quite end up the way I wanted it either. I had high blood pressure. I was under immense stress and they took her out at 37 weeks. They were like, we got to induce. Your blood pressure's too high. Let's go. So at 37 weeks, they induced. And I thought, oh no, I don't want to do this again. And then her heart just started dropping. Her heart rate started dropping and dropping and dropping. And all of a sudden there were like 5 people in the room and checking things and, you know, pushing around. And they said, well, you're going to push her out. Or we're going to cut her out. You got 20 minutes. And I thought, oh my gosh, I pushed that baby out. But before the atomic bombs, before childhood cancer, before Tank got hit by a car, you know, I was already going through a really hard time. And I kept pushing forward and I kept pushing forward and it built calluses and it built strength. Did you know that your brain goes under significant remodeling when you're pregnant? I mean, there's the oxytocin to the endorphins to a bevy of female hormones, and they multiply and they unite in a way that rewires your brain. You know, the neural pathways, the new ones stick and it rewires your brain. And those hormones stick around for 2 years after you give birth. No wonder if you're going through a mom's day moment, no wonder you feel out of sorts, out of whack, crazy. You're losing your mind. Like, why am I feeling this way? Why can't I handle it? Because your brain just went through a significant remodel, not to mention your body. Can we please just mention the fact that your hips get a little wider and your boobs get a little bigger? That's what happens, folks. And you know, some moms get stretch marks. Some moms have, like my best friend's mom, foot grew. I don't know. Did your feet grow? My feet didn't grow, but her feet grew like a size with her 2 girls. She only had 2 babies, but like with Jamie, it grew. And then with her little sister, it grew a size. And I remember laughing like, that's so weird, you know? But for me, I got cavities every pregnancy. It didn't matter. The baby was just sucking the vitamins and minerals out of my teeth. Like, it reforms you physically. It reforms your brain. It totally remodels your emotional state and your spiritual state, because you cannot give birth to a child and not go through a spiritual awakening. If a Mom's Day moment falls in your lap, man, no wonder you feel like you're going crazy right now. You know, no wonder this is hard. No wonder people look at me and go, wow, you're so strong. During that time where I didn't know how I was going to manage with these 2 small children on my own, I had my dog. I had Hoover dog. Here's the thing about mothers. And we tell our birth stories. And I imagine you're thinking about your birth story too. Like, some of y'all had perfect birth stories. Like, oh, it was easy. We had the baby. Some of you had really hard birth stories. Oh man, some of them are hard. Had them too early. You were in labor 48 hours. But does our motherhood really begin when we give birth? Because I think we're all mothers. I think if you're a female, you're a mother. Period. It's in our nature It's in our nature to be a mother. And I'm not getting political with the, well, they identify as a woman. I'm not going to go there. Okay. I have a lot of love for a lot of people out there in the world. But I mean, a biological woman is a mother. It doesn't matter if you have given birth to that child or not. You could have adopted the child. You could be fostering the child. You could be the child's teacher. I've been a teacher a long time in and out of the classroom. Those kids are my children. Those kids are my children. When we have to do those lockdown drills, that person's got to get through me first. A godparent, an auntie, an auntie. I'm called Aunt Care Care. That's what they called me when I was, when they were little, Aunt Care Care. So really, I was a mother way before I became a mother, before I gave birth, I was a mother. And I took that idea and I just percolated it in my head. It's like, when did my motherhood begin? And the truth is, my motherhood began with my mother's mother, right? My mother's mother. So when my mother was being developed in her womb, I was being developed as an egg in my mother's womb, and everything my maternal grandmother went through, my mother went through in the womb. So I don't know if you knew this, but you know, well, you know, like if you eat something spicy, what's going to happen when you're pregnant? You're going to get heartburn. The baby's not going to like it. They're going to start kicking. And you're like, oh, a baby doesn't like spicy foods. I'm just going to eat apples or whatever. You know, the baby, you have cravings that the baby, I think, gives you. And that baby feels everything you feel. That's why you can't, you know, do bad things when you're pregnant, because the baby's going to feel it. It also feels your stress. It affects the baby's temperament. It affects the neurobehavioral development of that child if they are stressed in the womb. And they are stressed in the womb if you are stressed. And my maternal grandmother, I can imagine, was very stressed. It was right after World War II. It was in very, very, very poor conditions. The world was in very poor conditions. And she was pregnant and she gave birth and she gave my mom to an orphanage. In fact, I think she went to the orphanage to give birth. Okay. She was in a very high stress situation, high stress moment of her life. She was so poor that she could not keep her baby. She walked into an orphanage and she delivered the baby and she walked out of the orphanage without my mom. And she wasn't the only one. It's not an original story. There were a lot of women, hundreds and thousands and tens of thousands of women around the world in 1946, 47, 48, 49, as the world was rebuilding and reinventing itself after World War II and this Great Depression that preceded World War II, it was a really weird and exciting time in history. And here's the thing, there were a lot of babies in that orphanage. There were a lot of babies in that orphanage. There were so many babies in that orphanage, and everyone was so poor that my mom got one bottle of milk a day and a whole bunch of sugar water. The babies were given sugar water to pacify their cries. So she was malnourished, and they didn't have a bevy of people around to pick up the babies and hold them and love on them and smile at them. And they didn't have colorful walls or mobiles to help their development, their neurological development. They had bare bones, man. It was bare bones in that orphanage. And my grandparents came by, walked in, picked her up, said, "This is our daughter." And they walked out. And that was it. It was that easy. I mean, it really was that easy. And it's been that hard to track down the paperwork over the years because it was that easy. And so then my mom is adopted. But the first 2 months of her life after 40 weeks in utero was extremely stressful. It was extremely stressful. And she had to have strength to survive. You know, her strength was not conscious strength. It was nature. It was primal. This infant was gonna cry her way to life. And then she was adopted by my grandparents, my grandma, the grandma that I called grandma, right? And that was turbulent. That was real turbulent for my mom because my grandma and my grandpa were the life of the party. They loved to drink and smoke and go out to the bars and the VFW. VFW, Veterans of Foreign Wars. Yeah, the VFW. Whenever that developed. I don't even know when the VFWs came out, but I remember them always going to the VFW when I was a kid. But they liked to party. And it's real hard to take care of a kid when you're drunk or hungover. And that affected my mom. It affected her, and there was a lot of trauma in her life. And by the time she had me at 32 years old, I was getting that from her. I was feeling that from her. Now, when she had me, she was in a very safe, stable, wonderful place. Okay. And when I was born, I was very loved. I was very taken care of. Nobody ever put me down. I was held all the time because I'm the baby of six and I was the baby grandchild. And there was just a line of people to hold me and smile at me and play with me. I was very loved. I had a very different beginning in this life than my mom did. And yet, my motherhood started generations before I was even born. And when you're on social media or you're watching the news or you're reading a book or you're talking to your therapist and they talk about these generational cycles, that is one that my mom broke. She's like, no, when I have this baby, I'm going to hold it all the time. I'm going to mother this baby the way I should have been mothered, right? Now, my mom, it was a very different mom with me than she was with my older siblings. Okay, there's a 10-year difference between my older siblings and me. She was a different mom. She was the best mom for me. So when I became a mother, my motherhood was fraught with fear, with worry, anxiety, excitement, you know, and I had my own traumas that I had to deal with. But it was hard. It was a hard beginning. And because I was not aware of this, you know, journey that we go on, I wasn't aware of the mother-daughter, you know, connection. I wasn't aware that on a molecular level, we're carrying around generations of trauma in ourselves, in our motherhood. I wasn't aware of it then. I'm aware of it now. I am aware of it now. And that is one generational, I mean, there are many generational cycles that I have broken and continue to break, but I guarantee you there's a ton I don't even know about. And I won't know about them. It'll be something that my daughters discover or my granddaughters discover, you know? But I think true strength, no matter what you're going through right now, true strength is getting up every day. Getting up every day, take a shower, do some yoga, meditate, drink your coffee, go for a walk, make yourself and your family a great big breakfast. Do what you need to do that does not involve a phone or a computer or the television to recenter yourself every day before those babies wake up. That's the best thing you can do to build strength. That's the fastest way you can build your mommy muscles is take care of yourself and prepare. And prepare. I wish I had known. Don't we all though? Don't you wish you had known then what you know now? I mean, come on, we all do that. Oh, if only I knew what I know now. When I gave birth to Harry all along, like Madam Princess was born 3 weeks after Hurricane Harvey, and I knew what I was doing by the sixth baby. It took me a long time to get there. Like, I wanted to have her at home. I wanted an all-natural birth. I wanted all these things. I wanted to be crunchy granola. That's what I wanted. I had gotten to the point of crunchy granola. I knew my rights. I knew the laws. I knew what I was going into. And then I had no home to bring her home to. Our world blew up and I had her in a hospital and I went up there and I was like, I'm in labor. The doctor's like, you're not in labor. Nothing's registering on my little screen here. I was like, look, lady, that's my sixth kid. I'm telling you I'm in labor. She's like, you're not in labor. You need to just go home. I was like, you know what? I'm going to be back. You're going to see me again tonight. So we go to Freebirds, which is like this burrito place here in the Houston area. And we start to eat and bam, the contractions came hard and fast. I was like, oh, sweet Jesus. I am definitely in labor. And I was furious. And I was like standing up, eating this huge burrito, cussing the doctor, and then bending over going, oh, oh, and like doing breathing techniques. And my husband's just quietly eating his burrito. And then people are sitting at other tables looking at me with fear in their eyes, like, oh my God, this lady is about to have a baby at Freebirds. Like, what is happening right now? And I remember looking at this man who was looking at me with these wild eyes. And I was like, oh, the doctor said I wasn't in labor. Does it look like I'm not in labor right now? And he was like, I don't know. Maybe you should go back to the hospital. So I eat. I was like, they're not going to let me eat when I get to that hospital. So I ate every bite and I drank my Dr. Pepper. And then my husband took me back to the hospital and I go into labor and delivery. And I was like, I told y'all I was in labor. And I mean, I was in labor and these pains were hard pains, really hard pains. So they got me all settled and the doctor came in and she was like, well, I'm going to break your water. I said, no, you're not. You're not breaking my water. She's like, well, yeah, I'm going to break your water so we can progress this and make it go faster. I said, nope, sure not, because I have a plan with my doctor and he is really good. And he's going to break this water right when I start pushing, if it doesn't break on its own. And when he does that, it's going to help this 10-pound baby come out a lot easier. And she was so mad at me. She did not come in the rest of her shift to check on me. Not once. That doctor was mad that I advocated for myself. I advocated for myself. And that is a stark difference from the first time I gave birth. Like, stark difference. That strength, these little moments you go through in life and you keep moving forward and you get up and you take care of yourself and you learn and you become aware and you prepare financially, spiritually, healing, you make the memories, you become aware of your surroundings, you become aware of the world. That strength. That is strength. And my doctor came in holding his latte. It's 7 o'clock in the morning. I was like, nice of you to show up with your latte. He was like, hey, what do we got going on here? I was like, can you break my water so this baby come out? And he broke her water and the baby came out. Like, broke my water and that was it. Like, she came out 10 pounds, all just under 10 pounds. Like, you got to advocate for yourself. I think that's and that's what I learned from my mom. The strength that my mom had in life, the scrappy sense, the scrappy one moment at a time, one foot in front of another, that is where my strength comes from. That and generational Texan, but yeah, you're going to find strength. You're going to get through it. I know you're in it right now. I know you're in it and you've been in it. You're going to get through it. You're going to have strength. Look at how far your own mom came and your grandmother and your great grandmother. Even if you hate your mom and your mom was a narcissistic jackass or she abandoned you or she neglected you or she's a drug addict and you are listening to this going, oh, my mom was a piece of shit. I can't rely on her for strength. Look at your grandmother. Look at your great grandmother. You have 5 generations in your blood right now. Did you know that? That's scientifically proven. You have 5 generations of blood. Maybe it's 6. It's 5 or 6, but it's a lot. There's a lot of women in your veins. There's a lot of mamas in your veins right now. You are so much stronger than you think you are. You are so much stronger than you think you are. You can get through this. You can. I know you can. Because hell, if I can, I know you can. I feel like I just rattled on and on, but I want to introduce my next guest real quick. Her name is Amy P. Not to be confused with Amy C. But Amy P. is a Texas gal who has lived in North Carolina a long time. And we recorded remotely. Like, she was in North Carolina, I was here in Texas, and we just had weather issues. So please be patient with it. We had to start and stop sometimes, and it was really annoying. And it was annoying me because what she was saying was so good. Like, she is just, I mean, she is 10 years ahead of me, 10 years ahead of me in healing, in awareness, in memories. I mean, she is so far beyond where I'm at. And I probably teared up and cried, I don't know, 4 or 5 times just because what she was saying pierced my heart. Not because her story was sad and making me cry, but it pierced my heart. It spoke to me. The wisdom this woman has. Oh, the wisdom. She talks about being, well, I mean, she talks about her mom and how her motherhood started early, really. But she talks about her kids and how this unhealed and unprocessed trauma affected her motherhood so much. And you're going to relate to this. There's this one part where she's like, well, I put my kids in front of a TV and then I had to walk outside while they basically watched themselves with this TV to call a friend so that I didn't sink, so that I wasn't just bawling in front of my kids. How many times have I done that? How many times have I just said, you know what, we're going to watch a movie so I can go into my bathroom and cry? You know, you get in these moments where you're not present. You're not present because you're in it. You're in the thick of it and you're sad and you're tired and your nervous system is like fireworks right now. Pew, 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 pew. You're just trying to keep everybody alive, including yourself. And how many times have we just disassociated, numbed the pain, scrolled through social media just to get through the damn day, you know? Like, just to get through the day. And she learned and she made choices. And we talk about a lot of great things. I really, really enjoyed my conversation with Amy. I really enjoyed it. She is strength. She has more strength in her little pinky finger than I do in my 44 years of life. That is a Texas girl who does not give up. She has strength. I'm so excited for you to listen to her. Please, please tune in and share the podcast. It not only helps this ministry, but remember, these women who are bravely and vulnerably stepping up to be a guest on the podcast are giving voice to those moms who have not found their voice yet. They don't know how to tell their story, or they're not allowed to tell their story, or they can't tell their story. That's what these brave and vulnerable women are doing when they come into the bunker. They open themselves up and they're giving voice to those who need to hear it. Until next time, stay safe out there. Know that I'm thinking about you. I'm on your side. I'm sending you light and encouragement. And you can always join me in the bunker.